Well, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. The Pels start good, finish bad. Astros, well, they just didn't get it. They lose game one, now playing for their World Series lives. Game two from Minute Maid Park. Can Alex Bregman refine his swing? Drew Brees back on the practice field? Patrick Mahomes back on the practice field? Are you kidding me? All these stories and much, much more coming your way today. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019.
Leonard on the right wing, guarded by James, attacks down the right alley, pump fake in the lane, turnaround jumper from 8 feet is good on the right block. Kawhi Leonard stuck on automatic with 28 points. 106-96, Clippers in front.
Raptors by two. They could definitely use a bucket here to add a little more to that lead. Lowry over the shoulder pass to Gasol to the sideline. The Van Fleet for three. Those onions have been big tonight as Van Fleet buries his fifth triple of the game.
Two to Soto. Swung on, hit in the inner left field. Brantley going back against the Crawford, boxes off the wall, bounces by him, back toward the infield. Robles has scored. Rounding third is Rendon. He comes in to score on a booming double off the left field wall by Juan Soto. He's driven in three runs in the game. The Nationals have scored three runs in the top of the fifth inning.
And good afternoon. What a day. What a Chamber of Commerce day. Let's bottle this sucker up and keep it. My goodness. Oh, welcome, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you and your CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses, among many things, KLWB 103.7 The Game. The Washington Nationals stunned Gerrit Cole and the Houston Astros, kicking off the World Series with a dramatic win in game number one. Man, if this is any indication of things, we might be in for a whale of a season, series. Game two tonight, 7:07, first pitch at Minute Maid Park. Juan Soto was the difference. And he just had it. He had his number. He had his number. Tonight, Steven Strasburg versus Justin Verlander. Man, we've seen some shaky performances from Verlander this postseason. The game he started on short rest against the Rays and the bad first inning against the Yankees in the ALCS when he admitted he was just a little bit too amped up. Steven Strasburg, on the other hand, has been as cool and as stoic as he is in a May start against the Marlins, as he is in the World Series. But this is his first World Series start, so you never, ever know. But again, down one zip at home. Astros better win this one, or it's not looking good at all. Not looking good at all. So, of course, you can hear that right here on 103.7 The Game. Astros lineup's got to start hitting the ball, right? They got to start hitting it. That's all there is to it. Come on, Alex Bregman. Let's do it. Let's do it. But the story was Juan Soto, the 20-year-old, hit a solo homer to tie it in the fourth and a huge two-out, two-run double in the fifth. He was spectacular. So game two tonight. It was game one of an 82-game marathon for the New Orleans Pelicans, and they started out just fine. I love the fact that Alvin Gentry had them sit out there and watch the unveiling of the world championship banner and to see the Raptors get their championship rings. And the Pelicans started out fine. They did. They started fast. against Toronto. And for four quarters, the promise of a young, talented squad playing without its best young talent was fulfilled. And then they came to a fifth period, a little free basketball called overtime. And then the experienced championship team looked the part, while the young team, the Pelicans, looked kind of young. They just did. So, in a nutshell, it's the beginning. And I don't understand some of the substitution patterns that Alvin Gentry went with. He knows far more than I do. He's with them every day. But man, how can you not put J.J. Redick back in the game earlier? Lonzo Ball and Derek Favors, who didn't play in the fourth. Anyway, that's just what it is. Fred VanVleet was too good. His three balls were just daggers. He finished with a career-high 34 points, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds. They had no answer for VanVleet. They had no answer for Siakam, who finished with 34 points, 18 rebounds, and 5 assists. He fouled out, and his absence should have hurt the Raptors, but it didn't. The Pelicans scored just 5 points in the extra period. They just couldn't get anything done. Brandon Ingram led the Pels with 22 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. He talked after the game, and he talked about the guy that comes in to replace Zion Williamson, Nico Melli, talked about him and his role on the ball club.
Yeah, that's something that he's been doing really consistent when he goes into practice. When he was out in preseason, he was really doing it consistently. We want him to shoot those shots because he's such a good shooter. So that was really, really good from him. And I think he's a really, really good player.
Good player, but they couldn't make the shots down the stretch. Full court game, the Pels were terrific. Their ball movement was good, but not good enough, according to Ingram.
I think it can get even better, especially for me, just moving the ball along when I don't have it on the wing or when I don't have it straight line attack or the shot. I think we did a really, really good job. We can look back at it and do better.
Okay, it all comes down to this. All offseason long, we heard that this is Drew Holiday's team. He is the best player we've got. He's our veteran, and he is an MVP candidate. Well, Drew finished with 13 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, and 5 turnovers in 41 minutes. That's not an MVP type of stat line. The Pelicans need more from Drew Holiday, plain and simple. If he plays like an all-star, the Pelicans win the game. He played like a subservient player, secondary role player, and they lost. The Pels played hard, and they played well at times. The effort was tremendous. In the overtime period, though, they had no identity. So it's nice. It's really nice to have a good, deep roster. But in the NBA, it's all about stars and great players. You got to determine who your guys are, and you got to go with them, particularly down the stretch when it matters the most. Alvin Gentry has to figure this out. So, next game, Friday, against the Dallas Mavericks in the Smoothie King Center. Lots of time to go. And they'll grow and they'll get better, but Alvin has to figure this thing out. You got to put your best players on the floor at the critical time. Who do you trust the most? But it all comes back to Drew Holiday. If he plays well, Pels win. If he plays like he did last night, they're going to lose a lot of games that you think they shouldn't have. All right, let's tell you who's coming up on the program today, because we got another busy day for you. Each and every Wednesday, we have our regular lineup of guests coming up around 2:30 this afternoon. Oh, we talked about it for the Florida game. We're going to have to talk about it again. The offensive line of LSU, how will they fare, man up, mano a mano, against that Auburn front four? Chris Truax will take us in the trenches. And what does LSU do to Derrick Brown? How do they handle him? John Hendricks will join us in hour number two. We'll talk about the New Orleans Saints where this team is heading, because it sure looks good right here and right now. And then, of course, Hump Day would not be complete without Hump Day with Huguenin. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will join us. We'll pick the biggest games, get his thoughts on the LSU-Auburn game this Saturday, and all the other big games in college football. So there you have it. We're brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. There are 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. It's got everything. I don't know how they fit everything that they do in their stores, but if you can think it, they've got it. They really do. Plus, hot breakfast, hot lunch, hot supper, hot coffee all day long. Every drink and beverage you could ever imagine. They've got it all. And if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you cannot shop right at all. Before we go any further, let me bring CD in here because we've got some changes to our programming coming up Thursday and Friday because, according to the meteorologists out there, the bad weather is coming in, and to the officials' credit, they're moving some high school football games from a Friday to a Thursday when the weather's not going to be bad. And I think that's terrific for the players, coaches, fans. I think it's great for everybody. So, CD, why don't you get us, our listeners, up to speed on who this affects and what 103.7 The Game is going to be doing on Thursday evening and Friday evening.
Well, on Thursday night, we're going to kind of flip things over. Everything's being moved back a day, as you mentioned, a lot of the games in the Acadian area. First things first, there's other games outside the Delta Media umbrella that are being moved as well. That includes Beauchene at Breaux Bridge, Opelousas High at Cecilia, Lafayette Christian Academy at Port Barry, Lorville at West St. Mary, and then you have Catholic High New Iberia at Homa Christian. All those games have moved to Thursday night. For what it's worth, the other games that are getting moved involve our Delta Media family of stations. St. Thomas More, always right here on 103.7 The Game. That will start pregame at 6:30. All these kickoffs are going to remain the same time, 7 o'clock. You have St. Thomas More Northside right here on 103.7 The Game. Our sister station Z105.9 will be covering the Carrancro-Abbeville ball game. Carrancro on a roll to start off the season. They'll be taking on Abbeville on the road. That's going to be on Z105.9. Then we have the Vermilion Parish Game of the Week on 106.3 Radio Lafayette. That's going to put Centerville at Vermilion Catholic under the bright lights of Thursday night football. And then last but not least, this was already scheduled to be a Thursday matchup. Maybe Lafayette High and Southside had a little bit of well in advance information with a Thursday night matchup that'll be on the rewind for the Lafayette High call. But if you want to hear the Sharks call, that's Mustang 107.1. So we got you covered on both sides of the field for that one. And then Friday, Jordy, we get to have the Astros game right here on Acadiana Sports Station. It was originally going to be in the rewind due to STM. So that being said, there's no reason why you should be turning your dial at all for the next several days with STM. You've got the Astros. You've got LSU Auburn. You've got the Astros World Series Game 4, Game 5 on Sunday. There's no reason why you should be changing the channel.
Well said. Couldn't have said it any better. So with that, thank you for the update. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Internet site has a mock NFL draft up. We'll tell you who's number one next.
You're listening to the Jordy Holmberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
Welcome back. Peterbilt of Louisiana with locations in Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and New Orleans. Jack Brabham and his staff ready to put you in the best, the most luxurious truck out there. The most reliable, the most dependable, the best resale value is a Peterbilt truck. We've got new sales, used sales. We even have leasing abilities. We've got a great service department, and our parts department is absolutely the best in the business. Everything to make your ride even more enjoyable. When the Tigers travel to their destination, the football team gets their equipment there via a Peterbilt truck. You can't miss it. Peterbilt, it's the envy of every truck driver. Every truck driver wants to own one. And now, priced to sell, Peterbilt of Louisiana. The big advantage LSU has over Auburn and over just about every team out there is they're going to always have the best quarterback on the field. And Joe Burrow has put up numbers that we have never seen before in the history of LSU football. A veteran, a senior, going up against a freshman in Bo Nix. Bo Nix may end up being a great quarterback. But right here, right now, give me Joe Burrow every day of the week, twice on Sunday, even on holidays. It doesn't matter. Ryan Wilson is an NFL analyst for CBS Sports, and he came up with a mock draft, and the draft order was based on team records through the first 7 weeks of the season. He said, all told, only three quarterbacks go in round number one, and with the first pick in the NFL draft, according to this site, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow. Think about that. Where was Joe Burrow at this time a year ago? Think about that. Fast forward. Nobody's even mentioning him in any type of first-round draft at all. No, and now he's a Heisman Trophy front runner right here, right now. And this site has him going to the Cincinnati Bengals, which makes perfect sense. Cincinnati, Ohio. He's from Ohio. And the site says Burrow has been the best player in college football over the first month and a half. And in that time, he's gone from a day two pick at best prospect to vying to be the first player taken in the entire draft. It's just a remarkable, remarkable story with a young man who's got his head on straight. Now, it gets even more interesting. In round two, he has Tua Tagovailoa going to the Miami Dolphins. Chase Young, the edge rusher from Ohio State, going to the Washington Redskins with the third pick. In the fourth pick to the hated Atlanta Falcons, he's got Grant Delpit of LSU going there, saying the Falcons need help everywhere, but the defense has been particularly bad this season. Delpit can line up anywhere, in center field, the slot, near the line of scrimmage, off the edge, and wherever he ends up, he consistently make plays. He's best coming downhill, but he'll continue to improve the other aspects of his game, and his long, lean frame coupled with his fluid movements make him look like a natural playmaker. That's high praise, and it's very accurate. Pick five, the Jets go with an offensive lineman from Georgia, Andrew Thomas. Pick six, the Giants go with Ohio State cornerback Jeff Okuda. Pick seven, the Chargers go with Tristan Wirfs, an offensive lineman from Iowa. In pick eight, the Broncos go with Jerry Jeudy, a wide receiver from Alabama. Pick number nine, the Cleveland Browns go with Derek Brown, the defensive lineman from Auburn, 6'5", 318 pounds. This is what they say about the focal point of LSU's offensive line this Saturday. The Browns arguably have bigger needs along the O-line, but they also need to shore up the interior of their defensive front. Enter Brown, who is hard to move off the ball and has the strength to push the pocket even against double teams. He doesn't have the dynamism of Quinnen Williams or Jeffrey Simmons, but he is a space eater that is disruptive around the line and allows teammates around him to make plays. That's what LSU is facing. So look out. Continuing further down, at the 13th pick in the draft, CBS Sports has Christian Fulton from LSU going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Fulton considered entering the 2019 NFL draft. He has quick feet, smooth hips, and was arguably LSU's best cornerback last season, even though he played across the field from Greedy Williams, the Browns' second-round pick this spring. According to Pro Football Focus Metrics, Fulton allowed just 41.5% of the passes thrown in his direction to be caught and held receivers to 49 yards after the catch during the 18 season. Fulton's off-field history may give some NFL teams pause, but his on-field abilities are undeniable. So, just a little interesting tidbit. Joe Burrow, from second-round pick at best, and that was a stretch, to quite possibly the number one pick in the draft. It's a remarkable story, and that's the advantage that LSU has in a game of this magnitude. Who's got the best quarterback? That's the team I pick, and that's LSU. I do believe this will be the most physical, the most nerve-wracking game that LSU will play. Auburn's not going to lay down. They're not going to give up. There's too much at stake for them, and this is too big of a rivalry game. And they've got pro players on their team. I just think LSU's offense, though, is too good. Too good. And again, a team that has covered the spread in every game this year, I think they do it again. But we're going to talk about that line play. It's very, very significant. Chris Truax played the position for LSU. He coached the position in college, and he'll tell us all about it next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get down to the line of scrimmage brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. There's no better place to spend your RV getaway than True Lodging RV Park at 996 Main Street in Hackberry, Louisiana. From classic comforts to high-speed Wi-Fi, we've got you covered at True Lodging RV Park. And look, after this Saturday, you got an open weekend. Oh, man, the birds, the fishing, the hunting, it's all out there. It's a great place to go. Make your plans to visit True Lodging RV Park. You may run into our next guest, the former LSU offensive lineman, college offensive line coach, and now our guest each and every Wednesday, the one, the only, Chris Truax. Chris, good afternoon, my friend. How you doing, buddy?
Jordy, I'm great, man. I tell you what, I appreciate the recognition and getting the word on the RV park out there, man. I'm doing great, man. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to Saturday. You know, we talked about it before the Florida game. I think it comes in even more prevalent this Saturday. How does the offensive line handle that two-headed monster known as Derrick Brown and Marlon Davison, who have combined for five of the eight SEC defensive linemen of the week honors handed out this season? So they're good. LSU's offensive line, though, has gotten very good, haven't they?
Yeah, you know, Jordy, let me tell you this. This is the first time that we've really had any adversity at Mississippi State. You know, we go on the road in a hostile environment. Let me tell you something. All those noise, all those cowboys, there's a lot of distractions going on. And, you know, on the first three drives, whatever, we go down and we settle for field goals. We've been scoring a little bit. But, you know, what they held their composure, they kept their game plan intact, and, man, they came back and, you know, and were starting to score touchdowns at will. And so that was a great sign of a team that is hanging together and really kind of had their first really, you know, I'll say University of Texas, but, I mean, the second time they've been on the road and against the first time an SEC opponent that they really, really showed a true identity and team strength. So I was really impressed to see that out of the Tigers.
Chris Truex joining us as he does each and every Wednesday. You know, offense, they change things up. They don't give the defense the same look every time. I've heard LSU's offensive linemen talk about how we don't give the defensive front the same look every time. You can get the vernacular down for me, but how often do they change things up and disguise things to kind of throw that defensive line off balance?
Well, I'll tell you what's throwing them off balance right now. Watch the course of the ball game. LSU is still rotating offensive linemen, even through the last series and stuff. So, heck, the defensive line doesn't know what five offensive linemen are going to show up, first of all. Okay? Secondly, Joe Burrow, I mean, is leading the country. I mean, at a Heisman ballot right now. There's no doubt about it. He is the guy to beat. And that's going to make everybody around him pick their game up. But when they start trying to what they call tagging plays, meaning a check with me at the line of scrimmage, it could be a run play called and a check with me to a pass or to a screen or to another run or to the instead of running it to the right, it could be a check with me versus a certain look that they can play the other side out of the pool. Pass, run, screen. There's all kind of. But right now, you know, their system is, and you've seen it, Jordy, and the SEC and the LSU fans have seen it, that, you know, we'll get set up in the line of scrimmage, we'll try to quick count somebody, and then, you know, the quarterback or even the lineman are looking at the sidelines, too, to say, okay, oh, here's the front or here's the coverage. We want to run this play versus this look. And that's where I think you're scripting for a lot of success right there by getting the line of scrimmage and utilizing that whole 25-second clock.
Chris Truex joining us. Derrick Brown is one of those guys that he's on everybody's radar, going to be a high NFL draft pick. Do you just block him head up, or how do you game plan for a guy like that that brings, you know, 315 pounds and 6'5" frame that can eat up a lot of space and can push that pocket back?
You're definitely right. He has a space eater, big and pretty, and that's the way you want your defensive tackles to look like right there, okay? He's the epitome of an SEC first-round draft pick defensive tackle. So, obviously, you don't lose the game based on a one-on-one matchup. You either get some sort of double team on it by putting two offensive linemen on him, by meaning you slide the protection his way so that guard of that center will always have a running shift the guy a little bit with that guard, or you have a fullback in the backfield that helps double team him as well. But you always identify where number five is, but you sure don't want to lose the play on a matchup. Now, let me tell you something. Our guards are as good as any in the league. Be it McGee, be it our young man at the right guard, number 68, I'm drawing a blank on his name, or the young man number 70 who would just get back in the rotation a little bit. So I feel really good. And, you know, with Cushenberry at our center. Yeah, Sadiq Charles, exactly. You've got Sadiq in there, but with Lloyd Cushenberry there at center, we match up probably as good or better than most guys in the SEC do against Auburn right there in strength-on-strength between our centers and guards versus their defensive tackles.
You've been involved. You've seen this is a crazy, crazy series. They've had barns burning. They've had earthquakes shaking. They've had guys jumping over to block field goals. They've had Les Miles was fired the day after they lost to Auburn when he couldn't manage the clock at the end. It's been crazy, crazy, crazy. But for so many years, this has been LSU's biggest and best rival. And I don't see any change in that come Saturday. I think Auburn's going to come and give us everything we've got. And this might be the most difficult test to date for LSU.
It'll definitely be the most difficult test to date in Baton Rouge, without a doubt. You know, hats off to Gus Malzahn and his staff. They've got a quarterback that can beat you as well. They've got a big physical offensive line. I mean, you know, what was it? Was it last year or 2 years ago? I mean, we had to, you know, come from behind and beat them at home. And they'll be ready to play because they can't afford to have a second loss either. You know, in the SEC, I don't know what the remaining schedule looks like, but this is a big boy football, and this is why the game is, you know, nationally televised and 2:30 game, and it'll be great expectations. I just hope the weather. What are you hearing on the weather? Is it supposed to be the rain moving out or what?
Yeah, let's not discuss that. It doesn't look that great right here and right now. But we got to get LSU. We got to get Tiger Stadium rocking and rolling here. I gotta ask you about LSU's defense. It looks like some of the I don't know, fooling around, to kind of figuring out chess pieces. I think they got Grant Delpit where he belongs now. And I think his level of play is back to where we all thought it was supposed to be. When he's near the line of scrimmage, that dude makes plays.
Right. That's his makeup, man. That is his DNA, being close to the line of scrimmage in that strong safety role, not playing in the middle of the field, trying to come down and trying to close space on somebody and make it a play. He's got to be an active member of that line of scrimmage. I mean, he can cover the slot guy. That's fine. But he is a guy, when that toss switch coming to him, or the fullback or off tackles will pull and try to kick him out, boy, he can squeeze that gap down and still shug off the defender and still make the play. I mean, that's where he's meant to be, and that's why he was an All-American and All-Conference player at that position.
We get Terrace Marshall back. That gives Joe Burrow yet another weapon.
Jeez.
But how about the play of Thaddeus Moss? That kid,
yeah.
Thaddeus Moss is a player, man.
So glad to see his number being called, because really our tight end game has been kind of dormant this year. So they have found a role. Obviously, the young man is healthy. You know what? Watching him play, it's been a pleasant surprise, because I really didn't know how physical the young man was. But, I mean, he played really well. Now, I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, Mississippi State, you know, lost, you know, off of last year's team. They had three first-rounders drafted, and then, you know, the Fitzgerald kid, I mean, their quarterback is gone as well, too. So, I mean, they're still looking for an offensive identity and lost, like I said, three first-rounders on defense. But Moss, man, he banged on the line of scrimmage. He did great in the play-action game. He got open on one-on-one situations, and he caught the ball really well. Boy, he high-points that ball, Jordy. It's really, really impressive to see.
I'm with you. Chris Truax joining us, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in beautiful Hackberry, Louisiana. You were in coaching. Did you ever think that a guy making $4 million a year would be tied for 30th? In the coaching hierarchy, as far as what pay is concerned, $4 million and you're 30th. What's going on? College football's out of control.
Well, it's only going up. Price of poker's going up, brother, as we speak. There's no doubt about it, because I know a lot of people are scratching their heads. You know, I've got buddies over there on the University of Texas staff right now, and the boy, they are just all over University of Texas defense coordinators for giving up, you know, 48 points to the University of Kansas.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is. It's a game. Yeah. They need it's instant gratification. They feel like a coach with a certain pedigree is worth that money, you know, to the university and to the recruiting and to the football philosophy that program represents. So, yeah, it's not going down. It's only going to increase. So any of these young coaches, man, they might want to stick around, or they're going to have a pretty good retirement.
I'm with you, Chris Truax. So, how do you see this game? What are your keys for LSU in this one?
You know, get off to a quick start. I don't think we can have, like last week, have three independent drives and settle for 9 points. You know, I think we need to go down and control that line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. like we have been doing, but being able to punch it in the end zone. You know, we've got multiple positions that can beat, and Auburn knows that. He's coached at LSU. He's coached against LSU in different capacities. And he's a friend of mine. He's done a tremendous job. And but what's going to come up down first right now? LSU's not worried about
Chris. We're losing you, buddy. We're losing you.
I'm sorry, Jordy. Can you hear me better now? You know?
Okay, now there we go. We're on the edge of our seats. We want to hear what you got to say.
Well, yeah, what it is, you know, obviously it's not going to come down to time of possession with LSU because they're not winning any type of time of possession, but they're setting SEC records and putting a quarterback right in the Heisman race. But time of possession doesn't really mean anything. Third down conversion is going to be the biggest deal, I think. There's a quarterback on their side as well who's playing with a lot of confidence. But I just think we have more weapons than Auburn has this year. You know, I would still like to see some more production from our young running backs, but that kid is a consistent winner, and you know what you're going to get from him. But as long as our quarterback keeps playing the way he does, those guys, man, are just going to follow his lead and do what they're told.
I'm with you 100%. We got the better quarterback, the more experienced quarterback. We should win this football game if we continue to take care of the football and not give Auburn any cheap ones and hunker down on our special teams play as well. I think we should be in good shape. All right, Chris, go take care of business over there. We always look forward to talking to you. Have fun in Tiger Stadium on Saturday, buddy.
You too, brother. Appreciate you. Take care. Go Tigers.
All right, there you go. Chris Truax, the former LSU offensive lineman, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. All the amenities. But, boy, I tell you what, if you're into bird watching, if you're into fishing, if you're into hunting, or if you're just into relaxing, they've got everything you need right there. Water, sewer, electric hookups, close to downtown. It's all there. Really close and accessible from anywhere in Acadiana. That's True Lodging RV Park. The weather's getting right. Go enjoy yourself. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two. It's Wednesday. Saturday's coming. It's coming. It's coming. Can you get here soon enough? We'll be right back.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. DC's Little Capital Exxon bringing you this portion of the program right there at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie's a great sports guy. Loves the Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints, the Pels. Loves them all. Loves all the sports. He's got a great place. Welcomes you in. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Just look for the little state capital because it's DC's, and they've got everything you need. And that True Soul Food Deli. I talk about the cheeseburger all the time, but, man, they've got some catfish and some boudin balls and some, they got all kinds of great finger-licking stuff at D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. Saints and the Arizona Cardinals this Sunday, LSU versus Auburn this Saturday. The Raging Cajuns are off this weekend. We got Major League Baseball tonight. We got all kinds of stuff going on. And the NBA is beginning as well. So it's a really, really great time for sports. Again, Houston with Justin Verlander on the mound. Got to get it done tonight. You fall down 0-2, you're cooked. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but you're just about done. So must win time for the Houston Astros. And Joe Burrow continues to become the topic of conversation all throughout the sporting world. Everywhere he goes, people are talking about it. It's such a great story, and he's such a good young man, very humble, raised very, very well. He is so accurate, and as we said earlier, he's gone from nowhere to the top of the charts. He keeps playing like this, and everything will be determined in the next 3 weeks, in my opinion, because you go up against an NFL-caliber defense in Auburn on Saturday, then a bye week, and then the big showdown with what we hope will be number one versus number two in LSU and Alabama, going up against the best coach in many opinion, many minds out there in Nick Saban, who is a defensive guy. And if Joe Burrow can put up the numbers in that he has all season in these next two games within the next three weekends, then he's got a chance to make himself a heck of a lot of money. Don't take my word for it. Let's take Desmond Howard earlier today on a program known as Get Up. When asked about who is the top quarterback to come out for the NFL draft, take a listen.
Greeny, I think the number one prospect right now at the quarterback position is going to be Joe Burrow. I think he's going to be the first quarterback off the board. He's smart. Let me show you exactly what I'm talking about. This is against Texas. Now, he stands tall in the pocket. He throws a great ball. That's called ball placement. You don't see that from a lot of college quarterbacks. Excellent throw to Ja'Marr Chase. The Gators are trying to trick him. 6 men on the line. Who are they going to bring? He's smart. He fans the offense to the right, protecting himself and throwing another laser right for a first down to Ja'Marr Chase. And this one I love. I was here to watch this in live in person. Texas needs to play defensively. They bring blitzes off the edge and up the middle.
Did he
what does Burrow do? He navigates the pocket. He's still looking downfield, and he throws a submitting touchdown to Jefferson.
Take
to
that, Paul.
Where's Trevor Lawrence now, Paul? Where's Trevor Lawrence
now, Paul? Where's Trevor at now?
Joe Burrow, Heisman.
When you compare him to Tua, he rates higher and passes outside the numbers, which are NFL throws, passes in the red zone, and against the blitz, and against...
There you have it. Had some LSU Tigers in there, and Ryan Clark and all pumping it up for the Tigers. But Desmond Howard's right. He makes every throw. He is intellectually second to none. Obviously, he's in that playbook, and he's studying film, and he's with Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger, and they're showing the strengths and the weaknesses, and any good coach is always going to attack the weakness and come up with a game plan for that. LSU's strength is throwing the ball. Auburn's weakness is pass defense. Auburn's strength is running the ball. LSU's defensive strength is stopping the run. Now, you got to play the game. But I think LSU matches up very, very well with this team. If we just have the right mindset, the right focus, and we don't give up anything cheap defensively or cough the football up offensively, I see no reason why this LSU freight train shouldn't continue to roll on. But we'll make our picks later on in the week. Hour number two, Hot Topics. Saints talk with John Hendricks, Drew Brees on the practice field, and it wouldn't be a Wednesday without Michael Hugenin. He'll give us his picks for all the games in Week 9 of college football. It's all coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go the day after the Astros lost game one of the World Series 5-4 to the Nationals. Of course, game two tonight here on 103.7 The Game. It'll be Justin Verlander versus Steven Strasburg, another great pitching matchup. And to be honest with you, Astros are playing for their playoff championship lives tonight. You fall behind 2-0 with the series getting ready to shift to Washington, that's not good. So this is must-win mode. Pelicans look good. A young team took the defending champs to overtime, and then the older, more mature, more experienced team pulled away in the overtime period to win the opener Did you see those gaudy rings they've got? Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, let's get hour number two started as we always do. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, if you don't mind, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
If you're just joining us, we mentioned at the top of the show, but we'll mention it again. Some bad weather coming in. Clint, that means we're changing some things around programming-wise. Let's get everybody up to speed again on what's going to happen Thursday and Friday.
Oh, there's a lot of things going on Thursday and Friday. We're going to start things off with what's going on tomorrow night involving several Acadiana-area teams that we cover here on our Delta Media family of stations. St. Thomas More at Northside, that's being moved to tomorrow night. Right, same time, 7 o'clock for all these games, same time as normal.
Okay.
Then Carrickrow-Abbeville will be moved as well. That'll be on Z105.9. And then Vermilion Catholic game of the, Vermilion Parish game of the week, excuse me. Centerville taking on Vermilion Catholic. That'll be on 106.3 Radio Lafayette. And this game was already scheduled for Thursday, but it's a friendly reminder as well. Lafayette and Southside are squaring off tomorrow night.
Okay.
And Thursday night. That's going to be pretty much, to me, that's going to be a game that could determine which of those two makes the postseason. There's a lot of other games as well that are in our Delta Media family of Delta Media umbrella. So check out 1037thegame.com for the latest concerning your favorite school.
Smart to get ahead of the game with the weather that's coming in. It's no reason to have to play in the rain or if there's thunder and lightning. So very good for the leaders out there to have the presence of mind to move the games to Thursday, which means Friday we're looking to fill some programming. So I guess the World Series is back.
The World Series is back, Jordy. That is absolutely correct. We'll be starting that at 6 o'clock like the last two games, like tonight and last night are. So we'll only have like 2 hours of programming, and then we'll be back into a normal flow of things on Saturday with an extended edition of Under the Dome. And then we got LSU-Auburn. Then right after that, game number four, baby. So, Jordy, you got no reason to turn that dial.
That's exactly right. Keep it right here locked in on 103.7 The Game. So if you missed anything, just go to our website, 1037thegame.com. It'll get you up to speed on everything. So I thought Alvin Gentry blew it at the end. I don't understand why J.J. Redick was still on the bench as long as he was. And I guess Gerrit Cole is human after all.
Exactly, Jordy. He was human, wound up getting just absolutely destroyed by one Juan Soto, 3-for-4, 3 ribbies,
wow,
including a two-run double, in the fifth that really highlighted a big fifth inning for the Nationals. Jordy, now you brought it up perfectly. Back up against the wall now in this game two, but you got to like your chances with JV on the bump.
Well, I mean, look, Strasburg, he's not too shabby either. So the bats have to come alive. I don't know what's happened to my boy Alex Bregman. He just can't hit his way out of a paper bag. They need to get all hands on deck. This is like a game seven in my mind. You better win this one, or man, you got to do some unprecedented things. So the bats still not alive from some of the key members in there. But heck, Verlander's been in pressurized situations before. He's pitching on a full day, full rest period of time now. So at home, let's see what happens. Boy, there's a lot of orange in that building. I loved it. It was fun to watch. But you got to tip your hat to the Nationals. They were pretty darn good.
They were pretty darn good. It's just absolutely fantastic that we're just talking about what's going on with the Astros World Series Game 1. A lot of keys heading into game number two, and you brought it up perfectly. Alex Bregman needs to find whatever it was he had in the past and reclaim it. I think he will. I think he will wind up doing that. But it's going to be an uphill climb for him, largely because of the fact that he probably was up late last night just shagging baseballs after everybody was done. Because you know him. He's pretty much a robot sometimes.
I'm sure he was watching some video of each one of his at plate appearances, and if anybody's going to be able to rectify and make the necessary adjustments, he's the guy. Another fastball pitcher, but Strasburg has been very, very effective in the postseason with his 2-3 pitch count that he's got. So it's not going to be easy, But, boy, they could sure use Bregman to come back to life.
Agreed. Now we're going to flip it over to the NBA, obviously, opening night. And I want to get your just the biggest takeaway you had from Game 1. No Zion Williamson, but still were able to keep it at least somewhat competitive, bring it to overtime, but couldn't quite get the job done against the defending NBA champ Toronto Raptors. What's the big takeaway you have from that game last night?
They're young. They got to find each other. Yes, they're going to miss Zion. But the biggest thing I have is, what did we hear all preseason, all during the summertime? This is Drew Holiday's team. He's got the chance to be the MVP in the league. Well, if you're going to have that type of moniker placed upon your back, you've got to step up and deliver. He did not play well, only 13 points. If you're going to be in the mention for the MVP race, you got to get up in the mid-20s. You got to score. You got to defend. You got to do everything. That was my biggest takeaway. If they're going to go via the way Drew Holiday plays, well, they lost because he did not play up to the standards that I think he has to play by. And that's, you know, I'm sure that will change. But he's got to be more assertive. He's got to shoot more, drive more. He's got to take control more. And if not, well, this young team will go up and they'll go down. But he's got to play better.
Exactly. He's got to play better. But, Jordy, we got to also talk about what happened with the Lakers and the Clippers. The Battle of L.A. round number one went to the Clippers. It was definitely a fun ball game, to say the least. Mind you, was a little bit past my bedtime, so I didn't wind up catching the whole darn thing. But still, a pretty good one nonetheless.
Yeah. I watched the first half, and I'm going to state this, and I mean this wholeheartedly. The second quarter that Kawhi Leonard played was the closest thing that I've seen to Michael Jordan post-baseball venture. You know, before the baseball venture, Michael Jordan was explosive. He was quick. They called him the Black Cat. He was unbelievable. Then he goes to play baseball. He comes back. He's not as explosive, not as quick. So he changed his game. He changed it to a mid-range game. He would just back you up, shoot fadeaways. Would control things defensively. That's what Kawhi Leonard did in quarter number two. It was kind of like he said, okay, I'm going to let you guys do your thing. Okay, enough of that. Give me the ball, get out of the way, and let's win. And he was spectacular. I don't think anybody wants to play the Clippers because they're going to get after you defensively. Patrick Beverley, they didn't even have Paul George. You know what Leonard can do. But how about Montrezl Harrell, the big boy from Louisville? Anthony Davis wants no part of him, I can tell you. So Clippers, man, they're going to get after you defensively. So that was fun to watch. And Kawhi Leonard was just spectacular with 30.
He was absolutely spectacular. Just a great performance all the way around. But it was great to see the Clippers get the best of the Lake Show to start off the season. But now we're going to flip it over. One of the other big stories across the country is the Cubs hiring David Ross. Former player was part of that World Series squad. Are you surprised him going with a former player route on this one? Is this going to be the right move for him?
Time will tell on it. He cut his teeth in the broadcasting booth and did a good job with that. He politicked for it, and I think they want to bring somebody in that was part of their World Series championship mentality, at which he was as the catcher for that ball club. So. Time will tell. Aaron Boone, you know, former player, doing a pretty good job with the Yankees. Didn't get him to the World Series, but got him close. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We'll see what Mr. Ross can do. Time will tell. Time will tell.
Time will tell, Jordy. But, man, Pat Mahomes is not wasting any time getting back into practice. He's ruled
That's
out
crazy.
For Sunday Night Football, but yeah. According to Nate Taylor, he's already back on the field. Mind you, it's going to be largely individual drills and just throwing the football. But still, it is wild to think that Pat Mahomes is still out there practicing a week after having his kneecap dislocated. And it's even crazier when you just think about how much, like, Drew Brees, he's in practice this week as well. And, man, it's a weird time.
Yeah. Modern technology, modern medicine, everything's on the quick. I'm with the majority that say Drew Brees, go ahead and play backup, but don't play in this game. Wait till after the bye week. Mahomes, that's just crazy. I can't believe he can even venture thinking about playing. But with modern medicine, I mean, God, everything is on an accelerated pace. It's just absolutely amazing. Well, there's your hot topics for the day. Job well done, CD. I greatly appreciate it. That brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The weather's cooled down. It's a fall feel. That means you're going to be cooking gumbos and white beans and all that kind of stuff. Well, sprinkle a little dab of Cajun Chef hot sauce in it. Spice it up a little bit. Everybody's going to love it. So do yourself a flavor wherever you go and whatever you cook. Make sure you have a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce on hand because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. John Hendricks joins us next, as he does each and every Wednesday, to talk about the Saints and the NFL here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, we welcome you back. Time to talk a little NFL and the New Orleans Saints, who are 5-0 since Drew Brees went away with that thumb injury. But Drew Brees apparently back on the practice field today and getting some work in. I don't know. I can't imagine him playing this Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals. I just can't. But let's bring in our good friend from Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles, John Hendricks, who does such a great job for us each and every Wednesday. John, Drew Brees? No, he's not going to play, is he?
I don't feel like it should be a topic to discuss, but again, I think this is the first step, right? And then inevitable, and he wants to get some work on and see how he feels and trying to test some things out, you know, and I think it comes at a good time, right? Is that the fact that you got the bye coming up, and right. I mean, you at least see where you stand. So I would absolutely be 100% surprised if he plays in this game. I don't see it happening, but practicing is the step in the right direction of what's inevitably going to happen.
Right. Maybe he puts the uniform on, gets the helmet, and he serves as the backup to Teddy Bridgewater, and then that allows Sean Payton to implement Taysom Hill even more so in the offense, like pre-Breeze injury?
Yeah, you know, they actually started doing that a little bit against the Bears, which is a good sign. You know, just previously they didn't use Hill as much on offense and special teams particularly. So when Breeze went out, they would still use him on punt coverage, but they pulled him back on kickoff coverage. Now, some of that could be because you had J.T. Gray go down and you had Patrick Robinson go down in the same game. But still, Hill was on the kickoff coverage team, playing a lot more snaps on offense. I think it's a good sign for him to be a lot more involved going forward. But, you know, look, again, we'll see. They have an interesting test against the Cardinals on Sunday. Whether it's a smokescreen or not, you know, Breeze is coming back soon.
Yeah, Cardinals have won 3 in a row, but they haven't done it against the pick of the litter, to be brutally honest with you. I think their combined records were 3-11 of the teams that they beat. So, anyway, it's a step up, but I've got to ask you about the defense and what you've seen and how – I know they got better a year ago, but, man, they're playing at an elite level right here, right now.
Yeah, look, I would even argue, I think they started this run in 2017, maybe even 2016, because I believe this all started when Dennis Allen was brought in as a senior defensive assistant when Rob Ryan was still running the defense. And so I don't think that was by coincidence. I don't think the rift there was a, you know, a real thing between Peyton and Rob Ryan. And, you know, Allen takes over, and he kind of slowly has been rebuilding the defense since he took over. You saw it kind of get better overall as things kind of progressed, and I don't think it's a mystery that, you know, 2017 is a time where the Saints defense really hit some strides. And they got it done with a lot of things, with Marshawn Lattimore in the mix and you know, getting production out of Sheldon Rankin, David Onyemata, and these other guys. So, look, I think this isn't by chance or a fluke. We've seen these defenses take over. I think the biggest thing, if you're a Saints fan, is making sure when Breeze comes back that you can have them both on the same page, because we've seen, past several years, offense does great, defense struggles. Or defense does great, offense struggles. It just can't seem to get on that same page in a game. And last time I remember that happening was against the Eagles. Everything went perfect then.
I remember that vividly. John Hendricks, kind enough to join us. We saw that a trade was made. The Patriots picked up Mohamed Sanu from the Falcons. There's a lot of talk, a lot of rumblings, a lot of rumors about the Saints and a wide receiver. Are you hearing anything as the next Tuesday is the trade deadline? Do you think the Saints pull the trigger and make a move?
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. And, we obviously have to cross Emmanuel Sanders off the board. He went to the 49ers, and after seeing the compensation that the Broncos got for him, I'm kind of glad, because that was an interesting fight that for guys, 32 and kind of obviously on the back half of his career. Not that he couldn't help his team, but at the same time, they've been getting it done with what they got. So, look, I don't know if it'll be the sexy names that have been thrown out, like A.J. Green or Tyler Eifert and such, but I feel like they're going to make some type of move. Might be a lower-key move, maybe a Corey Davis. Maybe they'll look at Adam Humphries and the Titans. Maybe they can. I've heard some things about being linked to Golden Tate. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but right now is the time where you hear a lot of the hearsay, and what I say is this is where the Saints kind of do their due diligence. They got to maneuver the cap a little bit to make things work in the first place, but that's never stopped them before. And look, I feel we'll see what happens with Tre'Quan Smith when the injury report drops. Not that he'll single-handedly fix the receiving issues that we have for the Saints, but, again, he's going to help a lot. And, who knows? Steve Kirkwood might be a guy who comes back later in the year. So it'll be interesting if they don't make a move. I can see why they might not make a move and they feel good about what they have. But at the same time, there's a lot to be processed over this next week.
They just picked up running back Zach Zenner. They released him. They released linebacker Ray Armstrong, and they got rid of quarterback JT Barrett from the practice squad. What do you make of that? What are they setting us up for?
Yeah, that one I'm not 100% sure. I think one of those, obviously you can't have P.J. Williams back yet, so it's not because of that. Maybe it's potential trade. And interesting, because Ray Armstrong, I thought he's been doing pretty good on special teams. Maybe he's just kind of a fall guy. I don't know, because of the way the Saints special teams performed on Sunday. I know that they were kind of interested in keeping Stephon Anthony close to bring him back to work some special teams too. But, it doesn't surprise me about Zenner. Obviously, that's a good sign for Alvin Kamara. And, Zenner gets picked up immediately by the Cardinals, kind of do that homework on probably, the 5 to 10 plays in the Saints playbook. You might know, get some intel or information. But, it happens out of the course of the year. You do a lot of roster shuffling. It sucks for guys like JT Barrett. I feel like he's been on and off the roster almost as much as Andy Tanner used to be. But, again, that's just things that happen. And right. I think some of the other preemptive moves are because they got to bring in some corner help. Because from what I'm hearing, Patrick Robertson might miss some time from a hamstring injury. And J.T. Gray's ankle is something that's been bothering him for a little bit, so I don't know if he's going to play. So you're going to have Ken Crawley, I presume, in the lineup, and I know they've been linked to Kayvon Webster and a couple other guys in the secondary, and I would expect him to at least sign a corner this week.
Is Eli – I guess we have to wait and see what the status is of Eli Apple as well. Boy, he's been playing so well.
Yeah, look, a guy that a lot of people got on earlier and then he gets hurt, that's unfortunate, because I think he's been playing outstanding. It's a questionable penalty. So, I was there at the game, and from what I heard, it was a hyperextended knee is the first initial diagnosis. Hadn't heard too much afterwards, so I would tell you, from everything I'm hearing, they've dodged a lot of the worst case on that. It's not ACL. It's nothing that's a serious or career, or a season-ending or anything like that. I think if it is the hyperextension, you know, that's only like a 2 to 4 week recovery time, as opposed to, you know, being out the whole season. But again, he was moving in the locker room. He was in good spirits after the game, you know, smiling. His mom got some smiles out of him too. So that's a good sign, because typically when somebody has a bad injury, they're usually out of the locker room, and you can't even find them after the game. So I think it's an encouraging sign, but I would bet on it probably not playing this weekend.
John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles, joins us each and every Wednesday. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy, you take care. Swamp and Roll, KDCG-TV, presents tonight the original Swamp and Roll music TV show, taped live at Black Gold Casino in Tucson at 7 p.m. This week's featured band is Boogie Express, brought to you by LafayetteTravel.com. Every other Wednesday evening, the original Swamp and Roll show. Come check it out. Back with Michael Huguenin next.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, my favorite day of the week, because we get to talk with our football aficionado from The Athletic, Michael Huguenin. Good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing quite well.
The biggest storyline in college football is a left-handed quarterback's ankle. You know, they have this this surgery that they do, and he says he's going to be back for the LSU game. What do you think about all that craziness?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, but he'll be back. He's got 2 weeks off. I know that Alabama plays Arkansas this week. That's an off week. The next week, they don't play anybody. So my presumption is he will be taking the first snap against LSU. The question, will he be 100%? Probably not. So that means that LSU needs to get pressure on him. I'm of the opinion that the Alabama-LSU game is going to be a shootout. Both quarterbacks, I think, are going to have a ton of success. So if Tua's ankle is bothering them and he finds it hard to sit up in the pocket, or he finds it hard to move in the pocket, or he finds it hard to scramble, that's obviously a gigantic advantage for LSU. But my presumption is he'll be close to 100% by the time that game's played.
All right. Well, you know, we're fans. We can look that way. But LSU can't overlook what's coming to town with Auburn. There's been some crazy games in this series. Is Auburn the best defense that LSU will have played to date, or was Florida?
I think Auburn's defensive front will be the best that LSU has seen, especially considering Florida was without its defensive ends. The one thing that Auburn has that, frankly, very few teams nationally have is a stud defensive tackle. Derrick Brown is an extremely high-level player. He's a disruptive force on the inside, and there's not a lot of those guys around. I mean, you know, you look at Ohio State, it's got Chase Young, who's a phenomenal pass rusher. There's a lot of teams that have pass rushers that cause problems. It's rare, though, to have a defensive tackle who can be that disruptive, and Derrick Brown definitely is a disruptive force inside. He's the kind of guy who you have to worry about double teaming on every single play, and because of that, that means that on most plays you're going to have a defensive end, and Auburn's got some good ones who are going to get single blockers. But the thing is, LSU throws the ball quickly. Burrow doesn't sit in the pocket and look around and pat the ball and find, you know, he's a decisive quarterback. Auburn's pass rush did not bother Florida that much, and LSU's offensive line is better than Florida's. So, yes, there were some instances where Derrick Brown got to Kyle Trask, but for the most part, that was on Trask for not getting rid of the ball. So that should not be an issue for Burrow, though I will be interested in seeing if there's any success for LSU running the ball between the tackles. My inclination is no, there will not be success. Thing is, I'm not sure it's going to matter. Auburn cannot hang with LSU's offense. So Bo Nix still learning his way. The Auburn running game's a little bit questionable. The Auburn receivers are nothing special. I think LSU's going to win. Now, it's going to be a physical matchup, the most physical matchup they've had this year, but I still think that this is a game that LSU wins by at least a touchdown.
Terrace Marshall returns, so they'll have the trio of wide receivers back, so that's good news. We shall see. Always the kicking game is so prevalent in this one, with some crazy plays, some game-winning kicks. They've got another Carlson kicking for Auburn, and LSU's kicker is we're kind of wondering. Even Coach O said he's still our guy, but we have a backup plan just in case. So you never heard that a year ago with Cole Tracy.
No, and I think I'll be honest. If this is a close game, that I don't think that bodes well for LSU because they are a much better offense than Auburn. And if this is a close game late, to me, that means, either LSU is making mistakes or can't handle a pass rush, or, B, making a lot of offensive mistakes, turning it over and all that kind of stuff. So if it's close late, I'll be honest. If I'm an LSU fan and this game is close late, I'm worried about more than just my kicker. This game should not come down to a field goal. And if it does, something has gone wrong with LSU's offense.
All right, we've got some other games out there, including one of the great stories of college football that may be under the radar, but you've mentioned it a little bit. SMU is 16th ranked in the country. Sonny Dykes doing a tremendous job. Their play on a Thursday night against Houston in Houston. Of course, we know about Houston with players saying we're going to sit out the rest of the year, come back next year. But I think SMU deserves some love here.
Yeah, I think before the season this was meant to be a showcase game for Houston. And the pendulum has swung the other way. This is a showcase game for SMU. They are unbeaten. They lead at this point. They lead the parade for the group of five teams to get into a New Year's Six game. And this is the first time they've been ranked since they've returned from the death penalty. It is a really cool story. And I think if you're a college football fan of a certain age, you look at and see SMU being ranked, and you sort of nod your head, going, "That's pretty cool," because SMU was really good in the mid '80s, really good, top 10 good, and then because they cheated, and then they were put on the death penalty, and they really have been wandering the wilderness for the last 30 years, but Sonny Dykes has done a really nice job. Now, also, if I'm an Arkansas fan, I'm thinking, you know something? Chad Morse did a really nice job building that program, and maybe that lends some hope for Arkansas. But, Dykes is there. He's got a transfer quarterback, Shane Buechel from Texas, who's playing really good football. And SMU is a great story. And, yeah, I think they'll beat Houston. The AAC is really good this year. Memphis is good. Tulane is good. UCF, despite two losses, is pretty good. Cincinnati's good. Temple's not bad at all. So, but right now, SMU's at the top of that heap, and I think they beat Houston. And you're right. I think if you're a college fan, you're going to want to tune in for part of the night to see, hey, what's SMU doing with Sonny Dykes? What a cool story.
Yeah. I don't think we'll see the Pony Express back there, but still a pretty darn good story. I thought it was going to be a good story till they just flat out blew it against Illinois. 13th ranked Wisconsin goes into the Big House to take on third ranked Ohio State. What the Sam Hill happened to Wisconsin against the Fighting Lovey Smiths?
Yeah, that's to me is an even bigger embarrassing loss than Georgia losing to South Carolina at home. At least if you're Wisconsin, we lost on the road. You lost on the road to a horrible Illinois team. An Illinois team that lost at home to Eastern Michigan beat Wisconsin. And it showed a lot of Wisconsin's problems. Jonathan Taylor still ran effectively, but not great. And they had to throw the ball, and they weren't that effective throwing it. Jonathan Taylor fumbled in the red zone. Wisconsin threw a pick late, which makes you wonder, why are you throwing the ball with 3 minutes left, but they got picked. Illinois goes down, drives for the winning field goal. But, yeah, a lot of luster has been removed. I was thinking, okay, that's the game I want to watch from kickoff to end. And now I'm thinking I'll be able to watch about a half. Ohio State will be up by 3 touchdowns at halftime, and that'll be enough. I think, to me right now, the most interesting game all weekend is Michigan-Notre Dame, because Michigan lost again. They got 2 losses. Notre Dame's ranked higher. The game's in Ann Arbor, though. And, man, you know, Jim Harbaugh is getting a ton of grief. He'll get even more if they lose to this Notre Dame team. I know Notre Dame's a top 10 team, but this is a gigantic game again for Michigan. At some point, don't they have to beat a good team? And maybe this is the weekend they do it.
Yeah. I've seen, you know, it's really funny because you see some college, really good college coaches that go up to the NFL, don't succeed, and then they come back to college football. And, you know, Nick Saban is the class example of it. Harbaugh was better in the NFL than he is in college. That's hard to. What is it? Is it just because
the
NFL is just football and the college football is about salesmanship?
I think part of it is he's been slow to adjust to the offensive changes. You know, they made a big deal in the offseason. We're changing our offense. We're bringing in Josh Gattis from Alabama. We're going to go more up-tempo. We're going to use more spread. That still, to me, looks like a team that really doesn't have an offensive identity. And the irony is that, you know, when he was in the NFL, he took San Francisco to the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick as his quarterback. And Colin Kaepernick was not a good passer. He was a good runner, very mobile. And it's almost as if when Harbaugh went back to college, he totally erased that memory. Because it's his, you know, Shea Patterson's a mobile guy. He's got a strong arm. He still looks, though, the whole square peg round hole syndrome. And you know, Michigan defensively isn't bad. They're certainly not elite. But a part of the problem with Michigan is the defense is on the field so long because, in you know, last week example, they got down early because the offense was inept and the defense was on the field. It sort of gave up some plays. Penn State takes the lead, and then Michigan rallies late. And frankly, the dude drops the pass in the end zone with 3 minutes left. And who knows what could have happened. But this is a gigantic game for Harbaugh, a gigantic game for Michigan. And I actually think Michigan is going to win this game. I did not think they were going to beat Wisconsin, did not think they were going to beat Penn State, but I do think they're going to beat Notre Dame.
Okay, that wideout at Penn State's pretty special. That's really neat.
That is neat, yeah.
God, it really is. All right, Joe Burrow went from nowhere. Now there's a CBS report. They've got him as the number one pick in the NFL draft ahead of Tua. The turnaround, just the numbers this guy has put up, I've never seen anything quite like it. I mean, he's Drew Brees-like in accuracy. He gets rid of the football quickly. They've got a concept where it's simple reads, and they get rid of it, and they complete. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I think he is playing at a high level. I think he's definitely the Heisman front runner right now. And obviously, a lot will be determined by the Alabama-LSU game because, as everybody knows who follows college football and cares about the Heisman, how your team does is a big indicator of how you're going to do in the Heisman voting. So this is an interesting quarterback draft. Burrow to Jordan Love from Utah State is still well-liked by a lot of scouts. Justin Herbert of Oregon, Jacob Eason of Georgia. You know, what's going on with Jake Fromm? There's a handful of teams that like Fromm, and there's also a handful of teams who evidently don't like Jake Fromm. So this is going to be an interesting quarterback draft. And with the way the NFL is now, quarterbacks are always overvalued and overdrafted. So if I'm Joe Burrow, if I'm Jordan Love, if I'm Tua, if I'm Herbert, if I'm Eason, heck, if I'm even Jake Fromm, I'm thinking next year at this time I'm going to have a couple million bucks in the bank. And because that's the way the NFL is these days. I mean, you look at Baker Mayfield, you look at Kyler Murray, those aren't traditional big-armed NFL quarterbacks. There's a couple of those guys in this draft for sure, But the, like you said, the quick release, the quick read, getting the ball out, making the right decision quickly, that's becoming a bigger and bigger deal. And Burrow clicks off all those boxes.
Does Jalen Hurts get a sniff?
I think he probably will. Yeah, I don't think he's a first rounder because I still think there are some concerns about his passing ability. But he is a really good running quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's helped him play in Lincoln Riley's offense. Not that Saban's offense was, you know, it was not a hidebound offense. It had elements of the spread. He's in an offense now that has even more elements of the spread in there. And there's, you know, you look at Lamar Jackson with the Ravens. People say, oh, that kid can't play. He's lighting it up. And the irony there, in a way, Greg Roman is the offensive coordinator of the Ravens. He's the former offensive coordinator for Jim Harbaugh with the Niners and, I think, for a year at Michigan. So Hurts does some things that certain NFL teams will like. Burrow does a lot of things that a lot of NFL teams will like. I still – like Kyler Murray is an example, and same with Baker Mayfield. I'm not sure even half the NFL teams would have drafted those guys. But –
It takes is one,
right? And the year you come out, it's a big deal. But yeah, it's Jalen Hurts is going to click the boxes for a couple of teams. I don't think it's going to be in the first round, but yeah, he'll get a chance to play in the NFL.
He looks big enough and strong enough to be able to run the football in the NFL.
He does.
Maybe he changes
he's not frail
positions
by any stretch.
Right, exactly. Is there another game, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, that we should be keeping our eye on that's drawn your attention this weekend?
Well, you know, South Carolina, Tennessee is a little bit interesting. I'm not sure how good either one of these teams is. Tennessee's got the quarterback situation. It might be JT Shroud making his first start. Ryan Helinski is not 100%. I think that has some intrigue in terms of bowl positioning. Tennessee needs to win if they want to go to a bowl game. Penn State, Michigan State, I don't think Michigan State's that good. I think Penn State will sort of finally put sort of the nail in that in the Michigan State coffin. And Texas TCU. TCU is wearing really hideous-looking uniforms this week. But Texas really struggled last week to beat Kansas. They almost let Oklahoma beat them twice. And my presumption is that Texas comes ready to play, but that's an interesting game. Also an interesting game, Washington State-Oregon. Oregon coming off that huge win at Washington in a game that easily lived up to the hype. That was a phenomenally entertaining football game. That was a win on the road for an Oregon team that usually doesn't win on the road. The problem is sometimes you do stuff that people don't expect you to do. You get a little bit fat and sassy. And Washington State, that offense is going to make you – it's going to stress you all over the place because of the way they spread you out and stuff. So Oregon can't have too much of a hangover or else Washington State could get them.
And I guess in Lexington they're going, thank God that basketball season's starting because they've been a major disappointment, the Wildcats at 1-4. But they host Missouri. Missouri still holding hope at 2-1 in the east of the SEC, 5-2 overall. They're holding out hope that they can hang around a little bit. Who do you like, Missouri at Kentucky?
Well, Missouri should win, but Missouri should have beaten Vandy last week. I mean, that's mystifying how they lost that game.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Missouri, you pointed out they're 5-2. They played five home games. They won them all. They've been on the road twice. Wyoming and Vanderbilt lost them both.
Wow.
The thing is, you look at Kentucky, Lynn Bowden is not a quarterback, obviously. He's trying his best, but you put 11 guys in the box against Kentucky and make them prove they can beat you throwing the ball. Kentucky, I think, is better defensively than Vandy, and Vandy did a phenomenal job against Missouri. But I still think Missouri bounces back and beats Kentucky.
Not the greatest of weeks in college football. We keep waiting for that one spectacular, colossal one. Maybe November 9th is the one, but LSU can't overlook, but you like their chances come Saturday afternoon in Death Valley.
Oh, yeah, I think they win by at least a touchdown, maybe 10, 11, 12 points, somewhere in there. Auburn will make you work, but Auburn's offense I don't think can hang with LSU's. Well, actually, again, unless LSU coughs it up or makes mistake after mistake, they're going to have too much success for Auburn to keep pace.
He is Michael Hugin of The Athletic. You're the best in the business. Enjoy week 9 of the college football season. We always look forward to talking to you, man. Talk to you soon.
Excellent. Thanks, sir.
All right, there you go. That's Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. And look, we want to bring you to the ball game, right? This is the station that just keeps on giving and giving and giving, and we want to get you to Death Valley this Saturday to cheer LSU to a win over Auburn. Just text EARTHQUAKE to 68683. That's EARTHQUAKE to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets for this Saturday's Auburn-LSU game in Death Valley, courtesy of 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Back to close things out next.
Close your eyes. Some days I can even trust myself. It's killing me to see this way.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Closing Touches brought to you by DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Everything that you need, all within one's friendly confines with the cleanest restrooms and that true soul food deli with the best cheeseburger ever. That is DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It was on this day, October 23rd, 1993. Joe Cotta crushed a three-run home run off of Mitch Williams in the ninth inning of Game 6 of the World Series to help clinch back-to-back titles for Toronto. Joe Carter with the shot heard around Canada on this day, October 23rd, 1993. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share your day with happy 43rd birthday, Ryan Reynolds. Happy 79th birthday to arguably the greatest player ever in soccer, Pelé. Yes, the nuthead, LeVar Ball, is 52 years old today. So happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to them. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to Chris Truax, John Hendricks, Michael Huguenin, CD, and you for listening, and to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Holtberg. Have a great one, everybody.